Hi everyone, I'm Elizabeth Stein, founder and CEO of Purely Elizabeth, and this is Live Purely with Elizabeth, featuring candid conversations about how to thrive on your wellness journey. This week's guest is Stephen Salm, founder and CEO of Planta Group, a fast-growing international hospitality group whose mission is to continuously expand the power of plant-based living by creating dining experiences that encourage guests to both let loose and feel nourished, balancing indulgence with wellness. Planta has 20 beautiful locations across the U.S. and Canada, and I've recently gone to the Miami location, which was absolutely delicious. In this episode, we talk about Stephen's hospitality journey and his professional path in the hotel and restaurant industry, from working at the Ritz-Carlton and BLT Hospitality in New York City. Stephen shares about his personal journey towards a plant-based diet after watching the documentary Cowspiracy, which was the catalyst to champion change across the food system and open a plant-based restaurant that celebrated vegetables. We talk about the challenges and success factors of running a restaurant, how to build culture in a restaurant environment, Stephen's viewpoint on lab-grown meats, and how the plant-based industry has evolved. And lastly, we talk about how Stephen stays healthy and balanced while traveling. Keep listening to learn all about Stephen and Planta. Stephen, welcome to the podcast. It's such a pleasure to meet you, and I'm so excited to hear your story and all you have to share with us today.
So nice to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
So I know you weren't always into plant-based eating and doing what you're doing today. So let's take a step back and go into your previous career, you know, what you started out doing after college and what your path has been.
Sure. Yeah, believe it or not, I have chosen this path. I have always loved hospitality and really raised with hospitality at the forefront of our lives at home, you know, whether it was holidays, being the house growing up that always was known for, you know, meals being served at all times of the day, people dropping in constantly.
Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in New York. My mom is Canadian. My father was born in Germany and then emigrated to the US during the war. So European Canadian parents raised in New York. And, you know, the typical family life where, you know, just food was at the center of every discussion, you know, eating dinner on Tuesday, discussing what we were going to have for dinner on Wednesday. And that's really where I would say my hospitality career began, was just being a really active contributor at home, whether it's just cooking or washing dishes or prepping at the youngest of ages. And then when it came down to kind of, you know, getting serious about where I wanted to, you know, dedicate both study and professional career to, it was like, I think I want to be in hospitality. And it was like, yeah, no, that's not really a great path for you. I think, you know, become a doctor or, you know, maybe a lawyer. And, you know, I was really always fascinated by hotels in particular, how there could be a swim-up bar and a casino and a nightclub and room service and banquets and all of these things going on. And of course, you know, when you're young and a teenager, you think that, you know, these hotels make billions of dollars of revenue because you just see so much activity. And so I actually, you know, I got a job working for Ritz-Carlton, and not necessarily my first job, but that's really what started hospitality for me, and went through training in New York. Realized that there was quite a bureaucracy in becoming successful in the hotel industry, and not one that I was particularly admiring. You know, I really felt that I wanted to do something creative, be entrepreneurial, and like a Ritz-Carlton was an amazing place to be trained on how to care for guests, but it wasn't really teaching you how to be an entrepreneur. So my first kind of management role in restaurants was with BLT Restaurants in New York.
I remember that restaurant well. We were just talking about those amazing popovers. rolls that they had that had like garlic butter. Yeah.
Yeah. So started as a maitre d' and kind of worked my way up through management roles there, assistant manager, assistant GM, and then ultimately given an opportunity to become a general manager, and really learned so much about hospitality, about spirit, about soul, and how you could combine all of these aspects of creativity, business, and artistry on one P&L. And it was an incredible experience. I was then recruited to work at a very large sports and entertainment company in Toronto called Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment. They're the owners of the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Toronto Raptors, the Toronto FC, and a significant real estate portfolio as well. And, you know, really given an opportunity to create. And it wasn't an easy thing for me to say yes to. It's not as if I just got a call and said yes. It was a very extensive courting process that ultimately got me to say yes to leave New York, because, you know, New York was home for so many things and so many reasons. And it was such an incredible decision that I made, working for truly amazing entrepreneurs and kind of this level of business intelligence, but also working in a company that had accomplished so much, but really never really tried and tested the external restaurant scene. You know, these were just owners of teams. And so I had the opportunity to work on developing some amazing concepts. And about 2.5 years into my journey with the company, they sold the teams to, it was owned by a pension fund, and it was, you know, sold it to two telecommunications companies, the equivalent of AT&T and Verizon in Canada. It was called Bell and Rogers. And at that time, you know, it was made pretty clearly that like, you know, this entrepreneurial path of building restaurants was going to end. And they were going to focus on all the things that made a lot more money, like content and digital acquisition and so on and so forth. And, you know, had developed such an amazing rapport with the ownership and leadership in that company that just, you know, I went to them and said, listen, let's work out a path that says I'm going to leave this organization, but I'm going to leave and start my own business. And I don't want to be, you know, building my own business plan while I'm your employee. So let's figure out a timeline that works. And we did. And that kind of started my entrepreneurial journey in 2012. I partnered with a friend and a family office, and we built our first restaurant that opened up in 2013. And it was called The Chase in Toronto. And it's still open today. It was named the best restaurant in Canada the year that we opened, and just had some amazing, amazing early success. And so, you know, I don't know if it was luck or skill or a combination of all the things, but, you know, it really felt like, you know, I had the tailwinds of some angels on my side there, because really, outside of everything that traditionally goes wrong in restaurants, which they did, you know, we had a lot of things go really, really correct. And we sort of took that success and kept opening restaurants, like a multi-concept restaurant group. So we opened up a French bakery, a New England fish shack, a high-end Japanese restaurant. And fast forward to 2016, we have 4 restaurants and about 300 employees. And I watched Cowspiracy on a freezing cold January morning in Toronto, off of the recommendation of someone that was extremely involved in animal conservation, and not so much the animal conservation like you would see, you know, holding PETA signs, protesting animals, you know, eating animals, but actually like transporting rhinos out of harm's way from the Okanagan Delta in Botswana to different parts to safety. And we had actually just taken a trip to Africa the December before, and just have always had such a passion for animals, but really like that is a trip of a lifetime.
Yeah.
And so we decided to, we decided to go give up red meat after watching that. And I say we, meaning I watched and I convinced my wife to give up red meat with me that day. And then it was Sunday. And then by Tuesday, I'm like, wait a minute, I don't feel any different. What happens? Why, you know, what happens to your body if you're not eating red meat? And where am I going to get my protein? Like every single ignorant question that I get asked every day. And I was like, you know what? I don't feel any different. So I'm just going to go full vegan. It was then and there that really, it was like nothing really tasted as good as the way I was feeling. I was, you know, thinking better. I was performing better. I felt like I was, you know, a better leader at work. And it became very clear after a couple of weeks that no matter what I said or did, or even if I said nothing, kept my mouth shut, I was always the focus and topic of every conversation at the dinner table. Like, oh, what's the vegan going to eat? Are you sure, you know, we're going to the right restaurant? You know, like, or when it was my turn to order at the restaurant, they're like, okay, get ready. Listen what he's going to say. And so I was like, you know, this is crazy. Like, I have ultimate self-confidence and no issue whatsoever taking all the heat. But like, this is crazy that if this is what people that decide to choose to eat plant-based have to deal with amongst their peers, I need to build a restaurant that's like celebrates vegetables and, you know, gives people the confidence and excitement to walk in and feel satisfied. And that's when we kind of put the idea around Planta, you know, pen to paper. And, you know, within a few months, that September, we opened up our first location in Toronto. So September 2016, and kind of fast forward to 2023, we're about to open up our 15th location, 13th in the US. We have two in Toronto still. And it's, you know, building a restaurant company and, you know, working on scaling and training and, you know, being a leader and being a father and all of those things are all, you know, intertwined into this hot mess of growth that we're in right now. So that's the Coles Notes version, the 13-minute version.
I love it. Well, I can't wait to dig into all those different facets of you and growing the business. The first thing I'm thinking of is after watching Cowspiracy, which maybe if you just want to touch on like for a second what that movie is about and really like what was the biggest aha when you were watching it?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is 2016, you know, thinking about going to a grocery store in 2016 compared to going to a grocery store in 2023, right? Like they have, there was, you know, I maybe had to choose almond or cashew milk or soy milk from the health food aisle. And now it's like the dairy aisle is like two things and the non-dairy is like 100 coolers. So it's a very different time, even though it was a short amount of time. It felt like a different world and a different universe back then. And you can only imagine and give credit to all of these pro plant-based activists and diners that have been, you know, vegan since the 80s. It's like, wow, you know, like what were you eating? And so it was actually just a documentary exclusively around the climate impact of animal agriculture. And it was like uncovering this secret of just truly how unsustainable we have built our society around a food system. And if you think about like how, you know, my parents and grandparents would have sourced food for their own home in a pre-industrial era, it was like there was literally milk delivery from a local farm and egg delivery from a local farm. And you would know that butcher by name. And that world we are very far away from right now. We are in a world of ultimate convenience. We are saying, not only do I not even want to, you know where my food's coming from, I'm just going to order it on my phone, close my eyes, and whether it's groceries or McDonald's or anything in the world, I want it delivered to my doorstep. I'm not going to ask any questions. And so, you know, we've you know, traded this ultimate level of convenience for and low prices for, you know, uncovering and hiding the truth about what really happens. And, you know, we don't have to talk about the food system, but, you know, to know that we're, you know, growing food in one continent, which we have to, you know, burn down rainforests to, you know, even have the space to grow the food. And then, you know, use all of that food that we grow to then ship to another continent to feed animals and then raise animals for however long it takes. And then, you know, and when I say however long it takes, meaning like there is a birth of an animal that needs to be fed and hydrated until the point where they are, you know, converted into, you know, a commodity. And then go through a processing facility to then ship what you are, you know, what you have got, you know, obtained from that animal to any country or continent in the world is just ludicrous. You know, yeah. It just doesn't need to be that way to, I mean, of course it does for, maximum profitability and industrialization. But why, you know, in what world should we be, you know, just destroying the Amazon rainforest to then grow food, to then ship to Nebraska, to then ship that product to China? It just doesn't make sense. And so when you combine all of the steps of that sustainability secret, you realize, like, what am I actually contributing to? And, you know, I have, you know, a very long history of, you know, enjoying animal products for my entire life up until however many years ago. And I recognize that this is, you know, food that is truly indulgent and delicious to eat and, you know, has all of the different components of satisfaction, but at what expense? And, you know, at an expense that I can just simply say, like, I am in the business of selling food and I now know this and I cannot do anything about it, just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And so that's really what drove this interest in making a difference. And when I say make a difference, it's more about, like, okay, you know, being an activist is not a way to get, you know, attract people to eating plant-based. Like, holding up signs and saying, don't wear this or don't eat that has never been a way to win a popularity contest. But rather, instead, can we actually build something that is just normal? And when I say normal, meaning normal to the 93% of people that identify themselves as not being vegan. And the answer is that I think we can. And you know, what we've chosen to do is not really market ourselves as vegan anywhere. It's just, we're a great restaurant, period. It starts there and it ends there. And it just so happens when you order anything from our menu, there will be no animal products consumed. And we are hoping and feel very confident that when you leave, you won't miss them.
I love that. I think that it's so critical to have that approach, really, in changing people's opinions. And, you know, for us as a brand, it was, we didn't want to have this trade-off of culinary taste in eating healthy. So it's the same sort of way of, how do you get to a consumer and to say, this is delicious, whether it's healthy or not, this is delicious, whether it's plant-based or not. And in your case, I think also making a beautiful restaurant that people want to go to. So it's not, as we think about a plant-based restaurant in the 80s, for example, that was like lovely for some people, but not necessarily where you'd want to take a bunch of friends out and all have a good night out. So I think your design has also come through in that way as well.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So when you first watched this and had a change of diet and then the idea for Planta came to be, when you went to your team and your investors, your group, what was the reaction of everyone? And what was that like for you, really trying to convince them of, hey, I want to pivot?
So the first board meeting that we had discussing the idea of Planta, and it wasn't even called Planta back then. It had, you know, 140 other names that were not Planta. And it was basically like, I want to open up an entirely plant-based restaurant. Kind of the patriarch of the family office looked at me and said, I think it's time you start eating meat again. And, you know, we all had a good chuckle. And I was like, listen, this is something that I feel extremely passionately about. And, you know, if that means doing this outside of Chase Hospitality Group, which was our hospitality group, I was certainly willing and wanted to pursue it at any cost, because I did feel like, not only from a business perspective, but you know, there is still a huge amount of passion and artistry that goes into making hospitality make sense. And if that's where I was dedicating all of my passion and time and energy, then I knew that this, I could make this into something successful, or at least I wouldn't, you know, try to let anything get in the way of that. And, you know, it just kind of happened. You know, everyone was supportive and felt that passion. And, you know, we opened up our doors and it felt like we opened up a vegan restaurant, very much so. You know, we had lots of guests in, you know, like the Kale Yeah and Vegan for the Animals and all these pro, you know, animal activist gear in day one. And I'm like, okay, this is not really what we want Planted to be. And not saying that we don't welcome that, because of course, you know, we know that this restaurant is going to speak to the plant-based community. But if we're trying to make a difference, we need to get people that were dining at a steakhouse last night, and they need to be eating this. And because, you know, we're not going to make, it's not a light switch.
Yeah.
And it's certainly not a linear graph. But if you were to discuss today in 2016 with a meat eater and say, what would be your red meat consumption? And they would say, I don't know, maybe twice a week, three times a week. And you were to talk to that exact same person today, I'm not guaranteeing it, but I can certainly stand behind a lot of anecdotal data that suggests that that person would have a very different answer today than they did 7 years ago. And that's just the process of evolution. And so we recognize this is an early restaurant for our time. But, you know, the young generation that we have to continue to sort of invest in so much education in is that, you know, they're not going to need animal protein to be nourished. And that's through a combination of plant-based proteins. It's a combination of lab-grown meat. That's a combination of, you know, really, really, really amazing non-dairy, you know, dairy products that are coming to market. And it's just because it's not saying that, like, well, you can't replicate this. It's more that, like, why? You don't have to. Like, there's no need to anymore. Between the technology and the evolution and what people are actually gearing towards, like, this level of indulgence is more, like, people are more indulgent about their health than they are about anything in today's younger generation. And that's a, you know, that's an amazing shift that we have to continue to be, you know, huge advocates and supporters of.
Yeah. So you mentioned meat, and I'm curious to hear, you don't use any sort of meat analogs, and how you are thinking about that, but then also how you think about manufactured meat, but lab grown meat. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think it's remarkably interesting technology. I've actually never tried it myself. So, you know, I think there's this big argument back and forth on whether or not, you know, whether or not it's vegan or not. And, you know, I don't even know the answer to that. I would probably say it's not. But I think that it's, if it produces, you know, the same outcome, and it's more sustainable, and it allows the rainforest to be rainforests, and it allows climate change to reverse, then I'm all for it. You know, I think that this is exactly what evolution, you know, we are an incredibly smart, disciplined species, and we have to use that education for the good of the world and not the opposite.
What do you think about the health benefits of it? There's just seems like there's so much unknown at this point, right?
Yeah, I would truly say that I'm not the best person to speak to.
Okay.
Until I educate myself and try the product myself and you know, learn about it. But I think, you know, for right now, to get like a cutlet, for instance, like a made it from mushroom root, and it's truly delicious, and it's got great protein, and it's got great fiber, and it's got, you know, great calories and good calories. Like, awesome. Like, what an amazing use of ingenuity.
Like the meaty product.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It is. And like, all for it. Like, good for them, and really proud to just be a part of this movement in any way we can, and, like, you know, pulling our weight.
So I have to ask this question because I know people are thinking about it in their heads, since you get this question all the time, is what's your favorite, where are you getting your protein, but what's your favorite plant-based protein?
I, you know, I'm probably, again, like, really into, like, just building really well-nourished meals at home for myself and family. So I'm not thinking about, oh, I'm doing this for protein, calories, fiber, this and that. Like, I will build my meals based off of what is a healthy and nourishing combination of foods for my family. So lots of fruit and lots of vegetables and lots of juice and beans and grains and absolutely, you know, if I have a craving for, you know, some type of a burger, you know, we have frozen plantain burgers in the freezer, but we also like, you know, my kids love a Beyond sausage and our kids love the Jack and Annie's jackfruit tenders on top of or in addition to anything else. And then the next day they'll be like, these are gross. I never want to eat these. And then they'll go, you know, we'll go to a friend's birthday party and they have chicken tenders and they want to try them. And I'm fully encouraging them to do so because I do think that, you know, to allow ultimate flexibility in this movement, everyone needs to show that we're going to meet you halfway, whichever way that is. If it's a step in the right direction or the wrong direction, you know, having a rigid approach has never been a popular vote when it does this, and especially when it comes down to your own personal body. Sometimes you just know, like, hey, I need this. And if a kid feels that way, then enjoy that. And I think that's where my own body was like, okay, I'm craving like some real hangover food. It's like, I can definitely get into that with delicious hash browns and Just Egg product and an amazing croissant. And I'm like, I've just given myself the most amazing breakfast sandwich that is definitely not healthy, but it satisfies every bit of craving that I have right now. And so I think that's, you know, where do I get my protein is I get, you know, I eat a lot of like super well-balanced foods. I saw that there was a question on like the, what's the one thing you can't live without?
Yeah.
It's like, it starts and stops with my green juice in the morning. I swear to God, I travel about 3 weeks a month and I will stay at hotels when I travel that are in close proximity for me being able to get green juice in the morning because it is turned into that much of a routine. I don't think I've missed a day in years. And if I do, I just travel with like the little athletic greens packages for like emergency. I don't really love it, but like celery, apple, lemon, cucumber, ginger every single day.
And are you discerning of where you're getting that from? Because like, where are you finding a hotel that's near a juice bar or like a Whole Foods?
Exactly. Anywhere. And sometimes there's like, I mean, if it's New York, your options are endless because every bodega has like a juice bar component to it, which is just amazing. And if it's California, there's everywhere. And fortunately, you know, our city, our restaurants are located in cities that are pretty sophisticated from like a health and wellness perspective. So, you know, that certainly, you know, plays into the creature comfort, but like, you know, there's a gym in DC that like has a juice bar that will do a custom juice. And it took me like three hotels to find it. You know, I am pretty restrictive when it comes to that.
Well, I think it's great. I mean, as someone who travels all the time too, it's like you find your things that you need to have and that becomes super important because traveling can be so exhausting. So knowing what you need to feel your best is so key. I'd love to talk a little bit about, you know, obviously having a restaurant is super difficult, so much failure in restaurants. Although that being said, there's so much failure in every business, right? So I don't know statistically what that looks like, but super difficult to run a restaurant business. Would love to hear for you, you know, where you have really seen the success come and what's been most important for you in growing these restaurants that you have today.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's probably not a business out there that has a higher failure rate than restaurants. You know, it's already takes the challenging component of retail and just basically adds a 24-hour component to it. That's, you know, first and foremost. The second is it starts with your people and it stops with your people. They have to feel refreshed and excited to come into work every day. That's probably our number one asset. It's of course our number one liability because it's our most expensive item in our business is you know, obviously providing all of our employees with a wage that they can now live on and fighting against inflation plus everything else economically in our industry is some pretty challenging equations to balance. So, you know, what contributes to our success? I think that, you know, first and foremost, I mentioned is our people, but I think the other massive part of that is that I think we have purpose. And I think that that's what gives our business a different element than just a traditional restaurant. And I'm not saying that Planta isn't a traditional restaurant, but it is certainly a category that is different. It's purposeful. It's driven by all of those elements of passion and purpose. And I think that that's super critical. And not all of our businesses are successful, and success has different elements of being defined. Are we only defining success by EBITDA, or are we defining success by retention and guest happiness and guest satisfaction and most amount of visitations? And, you know, specifically like in our Florida region, you know, if we were to say, okay, every single month in Florida is going to be like January, February, then we would have the most successful region. But that's not the reality of South Florida, you know? And so, you know, how do you define success? And, you know, I think that there's a lot of different ways to answer that in hospitality. But of course, from an investment purpose, it's you've got to be in it for the long haul, and you've got to be in it for understanding that you're going to be getting a lot more curveballs than wins in your daily life.
So how do you define success for your restaurants today?
I think we try to evaluate all of the aspects of what success looks like. We look at our sales, we look at our retention, we look at our guest satisfaction scores, we look at our employee retention, we look at our guest retention, look at our week over week and year over year performance. And so there's a lot of things to describe, but you know, you can tell a restaurant that has an engaged workforce versus not. You know, for instance, you do an initiative, whether it's a dumpling feature or a cocktail feature, and you look at the restaurants that have massive percentage of their sales going towards those feature items, you know that that employee network is engaged and they're excited to talk about it, versus ones that just check the box, let the guest see for themselves that this is what we're offering. And so, you know, there's very, very, very different elements of what defines success, and it isn't just one thing.
So as you talk about people and that being, you know, the number one thing in the restaurant business, what tips can you share for really cultivating a great culture, motivating that your team, and really what has made you become the leader that you are today with those people?
You know, I think, first of all, to say that I don't have my own opportunities is completely false. I think that, you know, especially in the way and the manner of which we've scaled, it's been the hardest thing to do. And so I would, you know, give equal credit to all of our leaders, in addition to myself. Of course, you know, I'm championing the vision and their work and their contributions, but first and foremost is recognizing that, like, this isn't a one-man show, and this is absolutely like a 10 to 15 person show to like pull off this orchestra the way that we want it to happen. But I think it's first, you know, it's just recognizing that we make mistakes and we own them, and being an environment where you can communicate those mistakes. And a lot of people don't realize that that's a really awesome place to be if you are an employee. And it often takes those employees, it often takes them a resignation and then coming back to realize what they've given up and saying that, like, wow, like a truly progressive company is one that allows you to make mistakes and allows you to communicate actually how you feel and actually what you recommend, versus working for these more dictator, tyranny style leaders that are just like, it's this way or no way. And that has its benefits in terms of, like, you know, drilling in and a militant style service, but we're also trying to, you know, shape a movement. We're also trying to convince our very own employees that a plant-based lifestyle is one that should be recognized and followed. And so, you know, I would say open communication, allowing mistakes, you know, having a set vision and values that aligns and defines your company. We have, you know, values that champion humble, authentic, sustainable experiences. champion. We plan to win. Humble. We make mistakes and we own them. Authentic. Be the best version of yourself. Sustainable. Always think long term. And experiences. You know, we build real relationships, and all of those aspects contribute to our ecosystem, the plantiverse, as we call it.
Oh, I love that. It's all about the team and the people. That's what makes it be what it is.
Yeah.
So what in your, as you mentioned it at the very beginning, your experience at the Ritz-Carlton, really like learning hospitality, was there something in that experience that has really influenced you from a, whether it's team perspective or how you think about hospitality in the restaurant?
I mean, their number one, you know, thing that they teach you is we are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. I think in today's community, you know, you can't really say that entirely with gender definition. But when you think about it from a hospitality perspective, is that we must treat each other the exact same way we treat our guests. And you know, I think that there's a truly caring and committed identity with that platform of hospitality that Ritz-Carlton evokes, and all of, you know, I mean, so many hospitality brands evoke, and you know, that just, it's just genuine care. And they certainly do a better job of it than I do, both in the time that they've had to sort of master their vision, but also, you know, just the real employee culture and mindset that they have built into their every single step of the way. And as I mentioned in kind of the earlier part of this discussion, is like sometimes that can feel very prohibitive for somebody that's entrepreneurial. It like feels like there's a few too many steps and a few too many boundaries. But also, you know, they're protecting their guests and they're protecting their employees. And you know, you really have to appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned before, juggling being a leader and a father and all the other things in your life, would love to hear, I'm not someone who believes in balance, how you like to juggle everything in your life. Any tips that you can share?
Well, I have three kids, a 5, 3, and 1 year old. So it's just full chaos all the time. But, you know, I really include my family in all of these decisions around work and initiatives and excitement. And, you know, it's, you know, I think that to just see like the eyes of hospitality and like guest service that my children have already because of just the environment that they're growing up in is like just an amazing like commitment to parenthood is like, wow, like these kids really do follow in your footsteps. Like you can see how they share and then they serve. Like we, you know, I was Shabbat reader at one of our kids and like you bring in muffins for everyone and then you could just see them like they are passing it around before taking for themselves. And like,
oh,
they don't
even, so cute.
The teachers are like, you don't realize like that's never, we've never seen this before ever. And so, you know, these, all these little nuances, it's more so just involving them in the chaos. And, you know, it's not that I don't believe in balance, but I am so passionate about what I do every day that, you know, talking about work and going to work and coming home late and traveling like crazy has just become not only expected, but it's also appreciated because that's kind of the boundaries that we've set inside of our home. But it's a lot, you know, it's just like anything, you know, I don't feel like I only have three children. I also feel like I have 1,500 people that are relying on my decisions to pay rent and mortgages every month. And that's a big responsibility. So, you know, trying to make myself as available to all of our people is, you know, the barrier-free organization that we're trying to build.
Yeah. So as you think about, in addition to your green juice, what other things do you have in your day that you really need to set you up to be the best version of yourself and show up and be the person you are?
Well, my green juice solves a lot of those problems from a personal standpoint. I need my people to be the best that they are. So if they can drink green juice too, that would be my number one preference and wish. And I know it's a big lift to wash those machines every morning. They are just a true pain in the ass, but like the, you know, I perform my best when my team performs their best. And when they're talking to me about real issues and their recommendations on how to solve them is when I feel like I'm the most engaged. And, you know, our business can be pretty, you know, pretty challenging and taxing on like a lifestyle perspective. And so just getting ahead of, you know, how to avoid burnout and how to take care of yourself is so critical. That's what I would say would be, you know, the most important. And I think when I go through these highs and lows, I need to just automatically center myself. You know, whether it's like after a Thanksgiving, extremely gluttonous weekend, or, you know, or just, you know, going through, you know, a period of like downward performance or critical issues that are in our company, really recentering and balancing ourselves and saying like, hey, I need to get back into taking care of myself. And that's, you know, exercise and clean eating and, you know, really just trying to eat raw for 3 or 4 days in a row and just like really trying to like clear myself. It's, you know, having, you know, a partner in life that is extremely holistic as well is like, you know, really believes into this. Like you are what you eat. And the fact that we can build a business around that, number one, and number two is the fact that I can practice those same aspects at home is very, very refreshing.
Absolutely. Having that support system. We're going to jump into some rapid fire Q&A. Three things that you are currently loving.
Oof, that's a tough in this environment right now in the world. But I would say, you know, green juice, my Tonal, and my Audible membership.
A productivity hack.
Slack.
A goal that you're working on either personally or professionally.
A plant-based hospitality collective inclusive of hotels.
Ooh, let's hear about the hotels.
I really have high hopes and aspirations to build a plant-based hotel group that is solves all of the concerns and barriers of someone like myself as a business traveler would solve. Great gym, great food, great experiences, knowing that the hotel was built with sustainable materials and has a commitment to being climate friendly and all plant-based.
I will be your first guest.
Wow. See, I have a lot of those commitments from first guests. So it's really giving me confidence.
Where will the first location be? Dream location, May.
Oh my God. I have no idea. Dream location. Yeah. Oh my God. What wouldn't be a dream location for an all plant-based hotel? Like anywhere with turquoise water.
Well, adjacent to that, I'll ask you, what is your favorite hotel to travel to?
I've had some really awesome experiences at the Equinox Hotel in New York, which gave me confidence that this something like this could be possible because that is a hotel committed to health and wellness. And so I've had some really great experiences there. But travel is just like an addictive experience as well. And so to say I haven't had as great experiences in London or Paris as you have in, you know, in the middle of a, you know, on a tent in a safari in, you know, in Tanzania is there's so many aspects of hospitality that are truly insane and super craveable. But you know, I spend a lot of nights at Marriott hotels throughout the year, and you know, some of the most simple properties in California or New York are where I have the best sleeps, and it's probably because they're super close to juice bars.
Well, I love that. I feel the same exact way about travel, and I too spend many a night at a Marriott, and always looking for what hotel has the best gym. So. Nice. Love it. Okay. Favorite words to live by?
Fortune favors the bold.
A favorite book or podcast for growth?
Yours.
Favorite business moment?
One of my favorite business moments was opening our doors to Planta in California. Our first ever, which was an amazing milestone because it was so many years in the works, and just what an amazing both community and environment to open a plant-based restaurant in. Like, it is the most aspirational place to work with food.
And it's in Brentwood, is that right?
Our second one's in Brentwood. Our first one was in Marina Del Rey.
Great. And lastly, what is your number one non-negotiable to thrive on your wellness journey? Your juice.
Could you ask that for me?
Your green juice. I don't know. It could be something else. It could be like sleep or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, sleep is so important, but I can't, like, it's my fuel. It's absolutely insane. It's like, I literally wake up every morning with an empty gas tank and I just, it's like fully recharged after I enjoy it. So.
Have you gotten your kids on it?
They love it.
Even better.
They love it. Like, I have to fight my one-year-old daughter, you know, for green juice in the morning. It's just what an amazing concept that is.
Amazing. Well, Stephen, yeah. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. In closing, where could everybody find you and anything else that you haven't shared that's next for you?
We're about to open up our Buckhead location in Atlanta and always reachable by email at stephen@plantahq.com.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time today, Stephen.
Thank you for having me. See you soon.
Bye. Thanks so much for joining me on Live Purely with Elizabeth. I hope you feel inspired to thrive on your wellness journey. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, subscribe, and review. You can follow us on Instagram @purely_Elizabeth to catch up on all the latest. See you next Wednesday on the podcast.